Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
When I was with the circus, I worked in an environment of performing families. It was expected that all members of the family continue to work in the act. But what if someone didn't want to? What if one or more family members had other dreams and desires? Would they cause the act to break up and hurt the family's ability to earn money? Our guest today, Anthony Metten, is going to address situations like I described from my circus days and apply it to your lives and divorce through our topic, individuation. Anthony is a TEDx speaker, a certified coach, a corporate public speaker, a certified mediator, so we meet right there, holds an MA in counseling psychology with a specialty in career development, and is on his third marriage, which means he's been divorced twice, making him perfect for this program in so many ways. Thank you for joining us, Anthony.
Thank you for having me. And I got a snicker when you said he's on his third marriage.
Well, now we didn't talk about this when we originally spoke, but you know, first marriages have a 50% divorce rate, second marriage is a 60%, and third marriage is a 70%, but I don't think you're going to be part of this statistic.
Yeah, you know, neither do I. And who knows, maybe that's well wishes, but for me, I've really gotten to the point where I understand what I want and what's important to me, and that life's not perfect. You have to be willing to, you know, give a little along the way, and I seem to have found a partner that is of the same belief, I could go into depth on that, but probably no reason to. But yeah, I don't think
we're totally going to go into depth on that. Yes, I would like you to share why the first two marriages did have an early conclusion, and then what's different about this one.
Okay, well, again, you know, having a psychotherapy background, I will tell you that my first marriage was to find the love and connection I never felt like I had as a kid from my mother. So it was kind of like, okay, if I'm not getting it from my mom, I'm going to find another, for me, female in my life who's going to give that to me. But we got married when I was 22, had my daughter when I was 25. And so, I mean, right there, you know, you don't understand yourself. You're in it for the wrong reasons. This is probably not going to work out very well. The second marriage was for 19 years. We were together a total of 24 years. And towards the end, I realized that, you know, literally I married my mother from the sense that a lot of the same aspirations and emphasis on life that my mother had, my wife had. And, learning and growing over those 19 years or 24 years of not only understanding my mother and the relationship I had with her and what I was going to get or not get, but then recognizing that that's the same relationship I had in my marriage and how that is not who ultimately I believed I was, that caused the dissolution of the second marriage. And, because again, if I was going back to my childhood, you know, I was always trying to adjust and figure out what I needed to change about myself to get what I needed from my mother. And so when I had the relationship with my second wife, I was checking all those boxes. I had the status job. I was providing a comfortable home environment with vacations and so on. As I grew and mature, I figured out that, you know what, those aren't the things that are important to me in life. And so as I started to individuate and break away from that, that's what ultimately caused that relationship to break up.
Okay, so hold on one second,
yeah,
if I
know,
may.
It's long, it's
so the things,
one.
No, you're just fine. But the things that you mentioned aren't bad things. You know, the types of jobs you got, the fact that you wanted to be financially secure, none of that is bad. And you were very successful at everything. So, but why wasn't it exactly you?
Well, because I wasn't doing it for me, number one. I was doing it to prove that I was worthy of the love and attention I wanted. So, I was a sheet metal worker when I found the opportunity to become a bank manager, and my mother encouraged me to become the bank manager, not for me, because I was a high school dropout, not for me, but for her, because that way she would have a son with status, and that checked her box.
Okay, we can't go any further. High school dropout? You are so extremely intelligent. I mean, by the time this airs, your TEDx speech will have already taken place.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, that's a big deal.
I agree. Thank you.
a huge deal. Why did you drop out of high school?
So my parents were 28 years apart. My father had me when he was 60. He grew up when kids didn't go to school to help with the family business if needed. He was the second generation to run a tannery outside of San Francisco. So my family made all the upper sole leather for Red Wing boots, which is a big thing.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to be the third generation to take over that business. It was started in 1885. So a lot of history. And from fifth grade on, my father had me spending probably more time out of school than in school, traveling with him and doing business as he was grooming me to take it over. He unfortunately passed away when I was 15, a freshman in high school. And because I didn't have the relationship with my mother, I just decided, you know what? I never liked school, not very good at it, never spent much time in it. So I'm just going to go get a job. And again, because of the relationship I had with my mother, she let me do that. So I was a high school dropout. And
well, did you go in your father's business somehow?
No. So when he passed away, the business was number 5 on the California environmental hazardous list because of the chemicals that are used in tanneries. We were the second to last tannery left in California. And California used to have a lot of tanneries. And so by the time he passed away, you know, it just wasn't worth trying to fight that battle with California to keep the business viable.
Okay. You know what else I'm actually surprised about? When we talk about going to college, you know, finishing high school is something that, yes, you can do after the fact, obviously, with the GEDs. But when we look at going to college, you look at somebody like Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. Bill Gates, they started Harvard, I think they both started, and then dropped out within the first year and went on to be amazingly successful. And I've had many talks with people recently about, we are doing this whole push to get kids in college that should never be in college, and we're losing out on other jobs like trade jobs that people who do go in them, plumbing and electricians, are ultimately wealthy people because they have little competition, and we have this upside down kind of idea about how we should grow, which really feeds into individuation.
Absolutely. And boy, there's a lot of meat on that bone that you just threw out there. And we're going into more and more of a society where, you know, a college degree isn't necessarily what you need. I mean, you want to do well in the tech industry as a coder, all you got to do is prove that you can code. You know, you don't need a degree because a degree isn't going to make you a good coder. So, you know, but in 1993, when I started at the University of Phoenix, you know, getting a college degree was still a thing. And I decided to go to college because I wanted to do something with my life, and I felt like a degree was what was going to allow that to happen.
And obviously it did because of all the credentials that I just read off. Okay, so the piece about going back to the divorces, the piece about why you married, I wrote down, you were really looking to be worthy of your mother's love. And so you tried to do those things that were expected. Okay, that's great. So you learned from the first two divorces. Now you're in the third marriage, and it sounds like it's where you want to be and need to be. What's different about this?
So the first two marriages weren't about wanting the love and attention from my mother. It was wanting the love and attention that I felt like I needed in my life. And again, as a adult, that meant having a spouse. So, but you know, that mother piece was always, well, was always a piece of it. When I went through this major phase of individuation that I went through, starting in probably 2004 is when it started. My marriage ended in 2013, so it took many years to get to that point. It fell apart because I just decided, you know what? Maybe I do well in the bank industry, but money is not my main driver. Ethics are definitely a part of what my main driver is, and there's unfortunately not a lot of ethics in banking. Bankers may argue that, but...
Well, no, wait a minute. If we live through 2005 to 2008, I think we all felt a little bit of that.
Yeah. So, money is not my main driver. Ethics are a big part of it. Connecting with people are a big part of it. But that means that, you know, I'm not going to be wearing a suit and tie and driving the Mercedes. And, you know, that's my second wife didn't. Those are the things she wanted in her relationship. You know, as some of the last words she said to me as my wife was, status is important to me and you don't have it anymore. So, you know, becoming this person who wanted to be in service to others and help other people find their path and their journey and their success, however they defined it, you know, didn't bring her the status and the financial security and everything that she wanted and was used to. So, you know, that was those two marriages. My third marriage, my wife had, I am her second husband. She was married to her first husband for 10 years. She is... 8 years younger than me, so we're in the same ballpark. You know, I'm going on 58 this year, and she's going on 50. So we're both at the maturity level where we've kind of seen life, and we've also both carved our path out in life. And she was very clear right from the beginning that, look, this is my job. This is what I do. Do not mess with it.
What is it that she does?
Pardon me?
What is it that she does?
She's a property manager.
Okay.
And so, you know, she has to be very buttoned up, businesslike, and hardcore on the job, but that's not who she is personally. And finding somebody like me who has a softer side in what I do for a living, connecting with people and whatnot, that's what she wants in her personal life, not in her business life, but in her personal life. And so we kind of set the ground rules going into this. Found a great connection with each other. She's financially stable on her own. I'm financially stable on my own. So we're got that comfort. And you know, we've also learned over the years that you have to be willing to speak your mind, which yes. I think is, you know, communication is a big destroyer, or the lack of communication is a big destroyer in relationships. And
in any relationship, friendship, business, family, any relationship, communication is key.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'll tell you, just thinking about it, my first marriage, we got engaged by accident. And I know that sounds crazy, and I can explain it, and I will, but we kind of got engaged by accident. The second marriage, we were together for 5 years. I had no interest in really getting, didn't feel like this was going to be the right person to marry, but we had been together for so long. It's like, why would you break it off? And we wound up getting engaged and married in the middle of a fight when she was moving out. So kind of that desperation move.
Interesting.
And by comparison, I knew on the first date with my third wife that this was someone special. And I knew within the first few months that I wanted to marry this girl. But, you know, I also knew that I had to be smart about it and I couldn't be proposing after 2 months. I'd look like a lunatic.
Well, you could be on a reality show.
Yeah, there you go. But we did get engaged on our first 1 year anniversary and then waited a year and a half past that to get married. So, you know, timing wise, it was all a little more mature and made sense. And we had time to spend together and really figure out whether this is what we wanted to do. But again, I knew it right from the start, where the first one was, it happened by accident. The second one, it only happened after 5 years and out of desperation. The third one I knew. And I'm sure there's a lot of different directions I can go from there, but I'll give you a moment to ask a question.
How long have you been married? Did you say 2014?
Yeah, well, we're actually coming up on our, August will be our second wedding anniversary. So it's still new.
Okay. That's great. I love that you knew internally. I really, really like that. When I met my ex-husband, who I'm still friendly with, and it was very amicable when we parted, I met him in front of the hot dog stand on the midway of the circus, my first day with the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus in Youngstown, Ohio. And I looked at him and I just felt like I knew him. There was a knowing of the soul. And when people say you've met your soulmate, I know how that feels. But even though you meet your soulmate, you still have to work on the relationship.
Sure.
So the foundation may be there, but you have to be conscious enough to know how to continue to grow. And you know, with me, it was a learning experience. And that's why I think we parted amicably, because there was no blame. Mm-hmm. There should be no blame. Nothing bad happened. It was just life.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy for you.
I will share. I'll share this with you too. Cause again, it's, this, you know, you know, when you know, life brings you things, especially as you mature and whatnot. My TED Talk, which is next Saturday,
It'll be the 15th of May, right?
That is
correct. We're recording this on the 7th of May. So we're going to air it after the TED Talk, but go ahead.
Perfect. So in that TED Talk, I talk about, my talk is on individuation, and I talk about, that disconnect I had with my mother and what, you know, brought my second marriage to an end, because again, she, you know, wanted, she was with me for the status and what I could bring her rather than the deep emotional connection. And I've been practicing that talk, you know, recording it on Zoom twice a day for a couple weeks now, just to have a rhythm going, because we all know how the pressure is going to be when that moment you step out on stage, right?
Oh yeah.
I haven't seen my ex-wife for over 2 years. And last Saturday, I ran into her at the post office. Now, how does that, coincidence, sure, I get it. Don't make more of it than it is, Anthony. But it's interesting because I've basically been talking about her twice a day for a couple weeks now.
Wow.
And isn't that interesting how, again, call it what you want.
Thought creates? How about thought creates? What do you think?
Yeah, right?
Okay, keep going. So serendipitous.
I was pleasantly irritated that I ran into her, and also a little amused because she told me explicitly how she was on her way to Nordstrom's to pick up a pair of shoes she wanted because the salesman had just called her and told her that they actually had one in her size because they normally don't have it in their size and how her shoe collection is out of control, but she still wants this pair. And I'm kind of going, why are you telling me these things? And what a great reminder of why we're not together, because you know what? the shoes my woman wears are not that important to me.
Are they important to her though, Anthony? That's
sure. No. I understand that. And my wife has her own shoe collection, but that her shoes are not, you know, a point of conversation, let's just say.
But I really love that you ran into her. Isn't that interesting?
You know what? I find that deep. I really think that is deep.
And there are so many points in our lives where we're rolling along, we think we have it under control, everything is beautiful, and then in a nanosecond, we're pulled back to the past. We're pulled to the past, and those emotions come up, and we have to deal with them again. And that's what I tell people when I mediate for them or file for them. I say, you may be good now, but just be prepared for something to trigger emotions. And if you're at least prepared for that, it won't knock you off your game. So very interesting. That kind of moved me emotionally here. Anthony, we have to describe individuation. I could not wait to record this episode because when I spoke to you about this process, I have been putting myself through it and reevaluating. So please define it, first of all.
Yeah, and by the way, as we joked when we last spoke, we should have recorded that phone call because there was so much disgust in there. But individuation, because it is a very complex, multifaceted process. If you go to YouTube and put it in, if you go to Amazon to search for books, a lot of information out there, but it's very thick clinical stuff. There's nothing for the everyday person, which is what I'm trying to bring. And the easiest way I can describe it and the way it seems to get people's attention is I call it adult puberty. And I call it that because, you know, puberty, it's something we all go through and it changes the way we behave and feel. And fortunately, as kids, no matter what our family dynamics, we have a sense of what it is. We know that around the age of 13, something's going to occur, even if we don't really understand what it is. As adults, nobody's told us about individuation, even though we all go through it, potentially several times throughout our life. And if you saw the word, you'd have a hard time pronouncing it. It's just a weird thing. And what individuation brings to you is a change where you shed all the expectations that others have put on you to have you grow into and behave on a daily basis in a particular way. Individuation allows you to kind of break out of that shell and be clear on what's important to you and not worry so much about what those around you think and feel. So again, it's very simplistic. It's much more complicated than that. But individuation is really about growing into your own person, breaking away, individuating from a situation to what is better for you. Now, in my TED Talk, part of the reason this happens is when we're kids, rather than growing into who we are naturally, we have to take on the persona and personality of our families so we'll be accepted as one of theirs and be taken care of, right? Because again, if we're not anything like them, they're not going to want to spend much time with us. So we learn that we need to go along to get along, but in doing that, we don't grow into who we are. And so we carry that for a good part of our life. But as we grow and experience life and mature, we start to realize, at least many of us do, that, you know, life is short. This potentially is your one shot. For all these years, you've heard these voices in your head about, hey, that looks like fun. Or wouldn't it be cool if? Or, you know what? You don't like that. Why are you doing it? And we start to break away and get clear on what we want. And then again, start moving towards that, which oftentimes damages relationships around us because we're no longer behaving the way they expect us to.
Now, I will give you a personal example, and I hadn't thought about it, but I think you've just answered the lingering question I've always had about my brother. There are three of us. I'm the oldest, but we're 3 years apart. He's the youngest, I'm the oldest, and there's a sister in the middle. We grew up Roman Catholic and went to church every Sunday. When my brother was an adolescent, he just simply said, I'm not doing it. And my parents accepted it. And I always wondered, how was he able to do that? I mean, I went to church because I wanted to please my parents. It didn't bother me. So did my sister. But my brother did not want to do anything that he didn't want, that he didn't like. And they allowed him to do it. And he was very close with the family. And I think you just answered that lingering question, how was he able to do that? And I did what was expected of me as I got older and graduated from high school.
Curious question, and for you to answer. Is your brother somebody who's very comfortable in his own skin?
So much so you can't even believe it. Nothing rocks him.
There you go. And that's why he was able to do it. My older sister, older by 2 years, she went through individuation, a big phase, probably around the age of 30, right? Which is, as far as individuation goes, that's early. And you know, my mother and, see, my mother could never love us both at the same time. It was either my sister or me. And so it was my sister, unless my sister made her mad, and then it became me, and then the reverse is true as well. My sister wore her, didn't care what, you know, what everybody thought and what my mother expected of her. You know, she married who she wanted to marry. She got involved in the hobbies she wanted to get involved in. She cut her hair the length, I know that sounds ridiculous, the length that she wanted rather than the length my mother wanted her to wear her hair.
No, hair is a big deal with women and people. It is a big deal. Keep going.
So that drove my mother bananas and drove a wedge in between them because my sister just didn't care what my mother thought anymore. Where me, I spent the majority of my life so far caring what my mother thought and trying to be who she, who would make her happy so I could get some of the attention I wanted. And again, think about that. If that's the way you behave as a mature man, how do you think that's going to impact your relationship with your wife?
Not well.
Not well. And that's not even mama's boy stuff. That is just not being a man. You know, and that sounds right.
Or not being your own individual.
Yes,
not being your
that
own
sounds
person.
Better. That
your
sounds
authentic
better.
Self.
Yes. So, yeah.
Okay. So now we find ourselves in marriages. Mm-hmm. As our listeners are right now.
Yeah.
And something's happening. I mean, it could be a number of different situations. You could have gotten together as high school sweethearts, and it was so wonderful. The natural thing is to get married and start a family. You do that, and now there's a point where, why isn't this feeling comfortable anymore? Why aren't we meeting each other's needs? Okay, that's one scenario versus you get married for some other reason and now you're 20 years in the marriage. And why isn't it working? You've been married for 20 years, for heaven's sakes, and either there's the new Ferrari, if you can afford that, and the new haircut on the husband, or the wife is going out socially when she never did. She always stayed home. So we go through this several points in our lives. What do we do when we're married? How do we recognize it? And how do we deal with it?
Yeah.
So much.
Again, a lot of meat on the bone there. First of all, I think communication is key. You know, the more you're willing to talk and the more you're willing to talk and listen rather than defend, right?
Okay, say that again. Willing to talk. Say it again.
The more you're willing to talk and listen but not defend.
Keep going. Excellent.
The healthier and more resilient your marriage will be. That really needs to start early in the relationship and oftentimes doesn't because, you know, we get married when we're young and we're still growing. We don't understand these things. But I think it can start at any time. For men, I think to be able to talk and listen and not defend requires a lot of vulnerability. And men aren't good at that. Being willing to admit or to hear that you're scared, that you don't have the answers. You know, these are all things as men we're trained that you need to have. You need to be able to do. Don't be scared. Have the answers, even if they're wrong. but we need to be able to open up and admit what we need. And we also need to be willing to hear what our partner has to say. And let me just say, since we spoke before, for the first time and before this call here, I've seen examples of relationships, difficult relationships, whether it be on TV or whatnot. I thought, if I was in that, even kind of knowing what I know today, it would be hard because you haven't developed the relationship. You haven't developed the relationship. You haven't developed the communication. You're at this juncture right now, and the only thing that's going to save it is the communication, the listening, and the understanding, and the support. But to go from where you are to that point is almost an impossible bridge. And I'll give you this quick example. I left the corporate world and became a coach and a therapist and got my master's degree and a speaker. And I talked on all these topics and what it's like to survive in the corporate world. And I helped a lot of people. And I thought to myself, I wonder if knowing what I know now, could I go back into the corporate world and have a much different experience? And through a chain of events, I actually had that opportunity to answer that question. And what I found was, even knowing what I know today, going back in the corporate world, I still struggled with a lot of the same things I struggled with. And I share that with you because knowing what I, for somebody who is in a marriage and is maybe trying to grow and learn and be a better communicator and make that transition, would they be able to do it having the realization that these things are needed in a healthy relationship? And I'm saying, from my experience, it's a very difficult bridge to cross. It's not easy. But you're together 20 years. You've built a lot together. You're going to lose a lot to separate. There's definitely a reason to try to make that bridge. And, after being married for 20 years, raising the kids, possibly being empty nesters at this point, which means the kids are all moved out and gone to college or living on their own. Does it make sense for your relationship to change? And maybe you stay together, but live a little more of a separate life, but trust in each other that you're going to be, you're not going to do anything to hurt the relationship. Sure, that absolutely makes sense. But again, is that an easy transition? No. It is something that I think if you have two mature, healthy partners who are trying and with the basis there being open and honest, continual communication, can it work? Yes. Without it, can it work? I don't think so.
And You mentioned communication several times, and when I was reading your biographical materials, two other aspects of this individuation process and working towards authenticity are emotional intelligence and leadership. And I think you hit on emotional intelligence without actually saying the phrase in what you've been saying. Can you communicate your feelings? Can you identify and explain, not defend, but explain your feelings? Leadership, does it apply here or no? To the individuation within a marriage?
Yeah. I think in the broad definition of leadership, no. But, in a marriage, if there's change needed, somebody's got to be willing to take the lead and show the way.
Understood. And that takes an enormous amount of courage.
Mm-hmm.
And also probably self-awareness so that you can be centered when you muster the courage to mm-hmm. take the leadership position, to mm-hmm. say to your spouse after many years, I want to be a different person. I want to lead a different life. This was fine for a while, but it's not who I am now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens in a long-term marriage. You just evolve. As you said, this is an evolving process. Individuation comes at different points in time, not just once in your life. And for people to understand that means they can allow it without prosecuting their spouse, does it not?
Yeah, and what came to mind as you said that is, here's the response from the other spouse, whether it be the husband or wife. What? I'm not good enough? The life we have isn't good enough? What? You know what, right? We don't hear that our spouse is saying, hey, I need something else. We hear that somehow we have failed.
Yes.
And so we defend the crap out of that. And yes. Then it's a fight. And then the person, the spouse who brought it up to begin with, is like, why bother?
Oh my gosh, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So let's set up another role play situation. So you are noticing a change in behavior in your spouse, mm-hmm. and you don't know what it is. And maybe your spouse isn't ready to explain it yet. Well, I don't know. It's just what I need. I just feel like doing it. I can afford to do it. I feel like doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really where it's at. It's I need to express myself differently and behave in a different way. And it kind of has nothing to do with you, at least in this moment.
Yeah.
Is that kind of right?
Yeah, no, it is. And, you know, and again, just as you're saying that, what I was thinking is, and now I kind of lost it a little bit, but what I'm thinking is that we get so tied up in everybody else's life rather than focusing on the one life that can make a difference for us, and that's ours.
Okay, right? I'm guilty. I'm guilty of focusing on other people's lives. Like, we have Bill Gates to focus on now. He's getting divorced. This is... Sorry about that, Anthony.
Well, yeah, I mean, what's Amazon's guy? Bezos?
Jeff Bezos?
Bezos, yeah. Well, yeah, Bezos just did it, so... Clearly, you know, I mean, he set the path for Gates. I mean, and I'm sure Gates' thing was going on a lot longer than that. But, you know, I mean, it's Bezos getting a divorce certainly didn't help the Gates situation.
I know. And, you know, I don't really know what happened in Jeff Bezos' life, but I do this series the last Wednesday of every month on celebrity divorces. Mm-hmm. And because it's interesting to look at through the prism of celebrities, the issues are the same. They just have more Instagram followers and a few more commas in their bank account with zeros. But I like to start with that and then show how those aspects of a celebrity's divorce, those aspects still apply to yours. It's all the same thing. We're all the same people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, money, no money, we're still all the same people. But so we're in this marriage and... we need to change. So what if you're in a marriage, Anthony, and you're the wage earner, you're the breadwinner, and changing will affect a financial shift. That's huge.
That was my second marriage.
So let's talk about that. What do these people do? What do you do when that happens?
Yeah.
And you have kids and college is coming up or you're in the middle of college.
You know, there is no quote unquote answer. There's certainly no easy answer.
You have to work it out somehow, some way. So this is where communication comes in. So this is a tangible, real issue. If money is affected, if the status of living is affected, and you do feel as an individual that your growth is really being hurt, and your self-expression, and you're no good to anybody. How can I be good to you as a husband? How can I be good to the kids as a father if I'm not happy and not expressing myself? So I'm thinking, if communication is the key, you sit down and you work out the money portion of it, and maybe the individuation process is dealt with on a timetable. Does that work?
Well, you know, how about this? Well, what's coming to mind for me here is, you know, like it's what is causing this to be a problem? Is it your ability to survive, or is it society's view and judgment on you? Because what you just said is like, hey, you know, you have a house, you have kids going to college, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, first of all, you don't have to own a house. You know, again, you can rent an apartment, it's cheaper. You can argue about, well, you don't have equity and build equity and all that fun stuff. Yeah, okay, fine. But we're talking about survival here. You don't have to have a house. You don't have to pay for your kids' college. You know what? I got an acquaintance. I'll call him an old friend because we really don't talk anymore. But he was a tech guy. You know, he's now retired at, if he's even 60, I'd be surprised. So young. You know, as far as I know, you know, multi-million dollars in the bank to retire from. He's got 8 or 9 kids. 2 marriages, all his kids went to college, but they paid for it themselves, right? So, you know, does society want to judge him poorly because he made his kids pay for their own college education? I don't know, but that was a choice. He was able to kind of live his life and do his thing, still retired at a fairly young age with enough money in the bank, but yet had this big family. And, you know, so again, are you going through a phase of individuation where things are going to change financially and that will negatively impact the relationship? But is it going to negatively impact the relationship because, again, you're going to be afraid to make the adjustments necessary because of the way society is going to view you, the way you were raised and the beliefs that you have about what you should do with your life? Or is this about, you know, living the life that you want to live and also being able to survive financially with a roof over your head and food on the table?
Well, you do have obligations back to your children, at least.
You know, I'm not arguing with you, but I'm taking the opposite side here, right?
Okay.
Your obligation, you know, is your obligation to, you know, to raise them, clothe them, put them through school, you know, help them buy their first house, send them to college, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Or does then let them move in the basement later on. Sorry,
exactly,
had to get that
right?
in.
Or does your responsibility to all that end at some point where now, you know, because I'll tell you what, who is the healthy child? The child who grows up in a wealthy home and is given the best education and the designer clothing and the fancy car? Or is it the kid who is taught from a very young age to earn their way and make things happen?
Bingo, the second.
Exactly. And yet, what are we talking about here? The pressure is to give them the first one, to take care of them.
To show them love, to show them how to interact with people and how to fend on their own. So I just uploaded an episode a few days ago, an interview with a woman named Cammie Lehman, who is a life coach, and she has her own podcast titled She's Invincible. Cammie's parents divorced when she was 5 years old. She had 2 other siblings, 7 and 9, but there was no spousal or child support. So her mom went out and worked 2-3 jobs, was never at home, and these kids are young and they're fending for herself. The title of the episode was Unconditional Forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
because she was on her own and fending for herself a lot, her grandmother came in the picture. I mean, her mother supported her. She didn't have to go out and work at 5 and 6 years old, but she didn't have mom at home all the time. Cammy has turned out beautifully, very independent. And, you know, as you say that, I think of other people who had very tough lives and had to be more independent as kids. And they turned out well because they had to grow quickly and know themselves earlier in life and become very self-aware. Yeah. And I'm not convinced that paying for kids' colleges is the right thing to do for everybody. I mean, my dad paid for my college, but I got crazy a little bit. I had 6 majors. It was 5.5 years every summer. So I was in college continuously when I started having to pay for a portion of it. My grades went up and I got more serious about what I was doing.
Yeah. You know, and again, okay, you got some financial changes, right? And you own this home, right? Great. Rent out a room. You know what? I've rented out a lot of rooms over the years because, again, you know, like in 2001, you know, what you could get for a rent on room in the Bay Area was insane. It would pay your mortgage, right? Literally last night, I made a post on LinkedIn about my TED Talk, and one of the guys I used to rent a room out to pinged me back. He lives in India. When he first came here, he just graduated from Penn State. He was in high tech. He rented a room out for us. he was younger than me, so he's, you know, kind of young guy. He has an arranged marriage back in India. He has to fly back to India, get married, and bring his new bride over to the U.S., who is just this fragile little flower, you know, just, you know, really not sure of herself and whatnot. They've been married now for, you know, 2001, so 20 years, you know, couple kids and whatnot. And he pings me back, and we have this long conversation. We're having a Zoom call next Monday. You know, he's a big wig with Microsoft. He was a big wig with Apple. And that all came from renting a room out to this guy. Wow. Lifelong friendships, I guess, is what I'm saying, right?
Yes.
You know what? I tell you what, you can go drive Uber right now and make money on the side in your spare time if you need to. We have things available to us right now. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying any of this is easy. I'm not saying any of this can work for everybody. I'm not saying that if I was in your situation, whoever the listener is, that my experience could help me through and make it work without breaking up. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying there's options, there's ideas. You have to be willing to talk about them. But when you're talking, you have to be willing to listen. And you gotta quiet that knee-jerk reaction to defend your position and feel hurt when somebody else says something that you don't like.
Okay, so you did a great job in the role play a few minutes ago about being the person going through individuation in a long-term marriage and trying to explain yourself to your spouse. Can you go to the other side and be the spouse noticing a change? Yeah. And being the first one to bring it up? Maybe give us some suggestions how that could be advanced.
Probably not a perfect description, but what comes to mind for me is, you know, when I first met my current wife, I could clearly see she was kind of a hardcore, driven, doesn't take crap from anybody person. But, and this is probably my training and whatnot, but I also saw, and my bet was that there was a little girl in there looking for a safe place to come out. In other words, a relationship where she could truly feel safe to let that little girl come out. And I would say that I was right. In her day-to-day job, she is that hard driving, hardcore person. But when she comes home, she's a different person. She's much more, you know, she's loving, caring, and all that fun stuff. And I saw that in it. And so I kind of bet on that, and I helped draw it out, if you will, by comments I made, by things we did, by gestures that maybe I made. So what I would say is, if you see something occurring in your spouse, realize that you might be wrong, you may be right. And even if you're right, your spouse may not even realize it yet, right? Because again, if you know your spouse pretty well, you're probably seeing things that they haven't saw in them, especially if they're not very self-aware. And so, you know, finding ways to introduce it, whether it be a movie or a book or a comment or pointing something out that you see, which I guess is a comment. you know, finding what, educating yourself about it, you know, or how about this? Here's even another angle. Ignoring it and going and find something you're interested in. Let them explore their life while you go out and explore something that you're interested in. So there's a couple different ways to go about it, because again, you know, catering to them and trying to connect with them isn't always the answer, depending on who you're talking about. Sometimes the answer is making sure you take care of yourself, so they're taking care of their self won't have a negative impact on you, where it leaves you feeling, you know, left alone and by yourself.
Well, what if the behavior in your spouse, though, is taking time away from the pleasures that you both enjoyed, and maybe some family activities? I think it might have to be addressed, but here's what I was thinking while you were talking. If you are the spouse noticing a difference in behavior in your other spouse, and to an extent that it needs to be discussed. Like, it could be financial. More money is leaving the joint bank account than normally is. And not that your spouse is spending it on other relationships, just maybe things or activities. Mm-hmm. So here's what I'm thinking. Let's talk about this. If you want to, should, or need to bring this up, don't be accusatory.
Very true.
Don't do it in a way. Don't be mad. You have to deal with your own fear level first. Mm-hmm. Understand that this is normal. So study this concept of individuation, and you're going to give our listeners, before we go, ways they can explore this topic through you and on their own. Mm-hmm. But getting your own self centered with, okay, let's not be fearful. Let's not put the cart before the horse. Let's simply say, I've noticed a difference, nothing bad, just wanting to know, you know, how's life for you? Or I'm struggling with what to say.
Yeah.
But addressing it somehow in not an angry, accusatory fashion.
Yeah, and by the way, is that in person? Is that in written form?
Oh, God, no, not in a text. Oh, my God.
Well, not a text. I'm just saying, you know, a literal handwritten, you know, letter to your spouse. You know, honey, I got some thoughts. Again, it depends on the person you're talking about. And you know, and here's the problem. I mean, there is no one answer, period. And how about this? We're talking about stuff that is socially okay. But what if we're talking about excessive drinking or drugs or gambling? You know, what if that's the change that we're talking about? That's a different ball game. That's a different ball game. And, you know, but what I think, what comes to mind for me with that is, you have to know your limits. You have to know what it is that are your absolutes, what you need, what you're willing to have in your life. It's different for everybody. You know, and although gambling, drugs, alcoholism, you know, might be a deal breaker for you, they also could be something that you embrace because this is your spouse struggling and you're never going to leave them abandoned. Same holds true if they're just going through some changes. They now have an interest in fishing, which means they're going to go off by themselves on the weekend rather than being with you to go fishing. That might be a deal breaker for you. You know, it's different for everybody. And none of this is easy. And it's not just about the relationship and what it causes you to feel and put up with. It's the financial impact on it. And it's a societal judgment of it.
Financial, there's so many different facets. So right. You're so right. Keep going. I'm sorry. You're so right.
Yeah, there's no easy answer. And, you know, having done some marriage counseling as a therapist intern, you know, some of the stories that people come in with are so difficult that, you know, you can't imagine it working through. And then on the flip side, there's the numerous stories about the couple who was completely broken and somehow found their way back, and not only back, but to even a better place than they were.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes that, what differentiates those two, the outcome? I don't have those answers, but I'll tell you what, if you have two people who have, who are self-aware to a certain extent, who may not be in love with their spouse anymore because they've been together so long, but they truly love the person and care about them. Give me two people like that, and there's a way to figure it out. Give me two people who, you know, either any of the one pieces, don't know, understand themselves very well, don't truly love their spouse at the end of the day, don't trust their spouse at the end of the day. Take any one of those. They're deal breakers.
True. So as we wrap this up, Anthony, I want to get to the one piece and address how do we use individuation if the marriage needs to transition out of the people need to transition out of the marriage. How do we use individuation to grow? My key phrase when I close all of my confirmation letters to set appointments for mediation or for filing, divorce is a new beginning. And this concept of individuation just fuels the concept of divorce as a new beginning. We need to, I love that you ask me, is my brother comfortable in his own skin? I think that's so important. And I think we all know when we're comfortable in our own skin, don't we? Can't we feel like, okay, this is it. This is what I've always wanted to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can use individuation as that jumping off point and say, well, we had a good run. We learned some things. It was great. It was not great. Let's part amicably and let's continue to grow. It's okay.
Yeah. And to your point there real quick, I would just like to say, and I mentioned this to you when we had our first conversation that, you know, at the end of the day, my second wife, which we were married 19 years together, 24 years, when we came to an end, we needed to come to an end. That absolutely was the right decision. And as much as it literally fit, I mean, it destroyed me, period, end of statement. As much as it did, I appreciate, you know, I started the divorce, she ended it. I appreciate her being so strong that she was able to bring it to an end, even though I didn't want that. Even though it was absolutely the right thing, I'm in a better place now. I appreciate the fact that we had our time together, but now we're not together. You know, I, even at the end, I still loved her. I still want the best for her. You know, if she ever needed anything and I could do that without hurting my current marriage, I would help her. But at the same time, I'm very happy she's not a part of my life and that, you know, I don't have to, I'm not with her anymore.
That you don't have to change yourself exactly. In order to stay in the marriage.
It's not that I didn't love her anymore. I did. I just needed to love myself more.
There you go. That perfect. you needed to love yourself more. That is such a perfect ending to this conversation. Anthony, in many of your capacities here, I don't know if you're still doing counseling, but you are coaching, you are speaking. How can people get in touch with you?
So the easiest way and the kind of the doorway is through my website, which is simply anthonymetten.com, and that's M-E-T-T-E-N. So anthonymetten.com, and there you can find my podcast. You can find my videos. You can, you know, you can find all kinds of stuff. So
Anthony, I didn't mention that you had a podcast when I was giving your bio. What's the name of your podcast?
Individuation Now.
Oh, okay then. I will be tuning in because I'm on my individuation journey, and I mean that seriously. Well, I'm on it right now.
Those I have all kinds of episodes in the can. They'll all be released to my website in about a week. So if you go there now, there's only the initial one, but the rest will all be released in about a week. It's a brand new website, and I didn't want people going to my old website and blah, blah, blah. So
understood. The transition in branding is important. Anthony, thank you so much. You have truly made an impact on my life personally, and you've added to the listeners because individuation affects each and every one of us. Thank you so much for your time and your information.
Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure, and I wish everybody who's listening to this the very best. It's your journey. Make the best of it.
And I want to thank everybody listening as well. Please share this episode with anybody you know, your friends and family. Please go to my website, theamicabledivorceexpert.com, theamicabledivorceexpert.com, and give me topics that you would like to hear or comments on this particular topic. Thank you again, and as always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.